are going to talk about moms and money during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off. He'll be back next week. Our guest this hour says motherhood is filled with financial stresses, from dealing with maternity leave issues to buying baby food and diapers to affording child care to trying to save for big future goals like college. And we will talk about all of those financial stresses and welcome your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our guest is Kimberly Palmer, former senior money editor at U.S. News and World Report, and a mother of two. She is author of the newly released book, Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What made you decide to write this book?
I noticed, as someone who was writing about money all the time, that so much of the advice aimed at moms when it comes to money was really about couponing and saving a few dollars here and there at the grocery store. And that, to me, was really frustrating because as a mom myself, I know that we need to be focused on such bigger picture things than just saving dollars and cents. We have to be thinking about investing for our futures, saving money for our kids' college, future college tuition, saving for our own retirement. There are so many things to think about that go beyond couponing. And so I wanted to address all of those bigger picture issues.
Your book cites research showing that 85% of consumer purchases are made by women, and that by 2020, women will control two-thirds of the country's wealth. Women are also the primary breadwinners in 40% of American households with children. So why do you suppose there's so much financial advice that's targeted toward men?
It is such an interesting question, because if you look at the big financial firms and investing and all of that, you really see a focus speaking to men. And it's actually also true when we meet one-on-one with financial advisors. I heard over and over again stories of couples, married couples, going in to meet with financial advisors, and the woman saying that the financial advisor was literally speaking only to her husband, leaving her out of it altogether, almost as if she wasn't there. And, you know, that really needs to change, because the most striking statistic to me as I was researching this book is that at some point in our lives, there's a 90% chance that we will be solely in charge of our family finances. And, you know, that's because of things like the rise of single motherhood, divorce, also just the simple fact that women tend to outlive men. So we as women, as moms, really need to be embracing this role as the financial managers of our household. So I really think all of that has to change. And, you know, there should be more equality when it comes to speaking about money between men and women.
Are you gearing the book to single moms?
No. So the book is actually aimed, I interviewed all kinds of moms, so single moms, married moms, working moms, stay-at-home moms. I think the unifying factor is that we are moms, because actually becoming a mom changes everything with money. It changes our priorities. It changes what we're saving for. It increases our expenses drastically. As soon as we become moms, we have so much more in terms of expenses and costs. So there's so much to think about in terms of moms. And so, of course, there are some specific unique issues facing single moms, and I address those in the book too, but it's really aimed at moms. And, you know, as a mom myself, I face these issues every day, and so that's what I wanted to write about.
Yeah. When you became a mother, or even became a mother again, how difficult did you find it to manage your home and work and money challenges?
Oh, I found it so overwhelming and so difficult. As soon as my daughter was born about 6 years ago, I noticed immediately that our expenses, my credit card bill basically doubled each month from, you know, even little things like diapers really add up to then the bigger expenses of I sacrificed some income for an extended maternity leave, as a lot of moms do. So that combined factor of expenses going up and then also income being affected, as maybe one person either works less or you're paying more for childcare, all of that adds up to intense stress on families. families. And so I think we can really use help and some strategies to help manage all of that.
Yeah, we'll get to those, but give us a sense of how expensive it is to have a baby.
Well, it's pretty shocking. So this number comes from the Department of Agriculture. They release a cost study every 2 years, and the most recent one estimates that having a child costs $250,000, and that does not include college tuition. So that's all of the costs up until age 18.
Wow. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about what women can do when they are expecting, or maybe if they're just planning to someday have kids, to prepare for the added costs and challenges of having children.
I think the biggest and most important thing you can do is to recognize that this intense cost is headed your way, so to prepare for that. So saving up ahead of time, as soon as you know that you're expecting a baby, you can start putting money aside to cover either a maternity leave, because so many of us don't have that paid for when we take time off to have kids, or also just to prepare your career-wise for that. So you can ask ahead of time about workplace policies that are family-friendly, asking about things like flexibility. So opening our eyes to when we're negotiating a new job, when babies are in the future for us or in our current life, to ask for those things that we need to make it all possible to balance everything, because it becomes very difficult. So the more we can prepare ahead of time and just really recognizing how big of a challenge this is going to be, so we're prepared for it, is the best step we can take.
We are talking with Kimberly Palmer. She is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. And we are welcoming your questions for her. Are you struggling to find a balance between motherhood and financial security? Did you put your career on hold to raise a child? What are some of your concerns or challenges as a mom when it comes to money matters? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Kimberly Palmer is the former senior money editor at U.S. News and World Report, and she is the mother of two. I wanted to talk a little bit about the maternity leave issue a little bit more. You, Kimberly, mentioned that you took more time off than maybe most, bigger than average time off. How do we decide how we're going to do this? Since as you mentioned, so many businesses do not pay for maternity leave.
Yes, this is such a big issue for moms, and one that a lot of people struggle with. So what I found is that actually most moms get zero paid time off in this country, and so that means we have to self-fund our own maternity leaves. And in my case, I was lucky in that I did get a portion, about 6 weeks, paid for, so I had to pay for the rest of it on my own. And so basically that means that as soon as you know that you're going to be having a baby, you have to start putting money into a nest egg just to fund your own maternity leave. So in some cases, that means if you're in a two-income household, if you have a partner that's earning money too, you can put one person's income away to save for that, or you can think about what is the cost of childcare in your area and put that money into a bank account before you even have the baby, so you have that nest egg built, because those are all costs that are going to come up when you are a parent. And so almost practicing saving that money and not spending it beforehand can help you get ready and then pay for it when it does come, because that's the biggest cost that parents get hit with, either the cost of childcare or the cost of lost income.
You wrote about a friend of yours on Facebook who posts pictures of her huge grocery store runs and touts about how little she spends because of all her couponing. And while you're a fan of deals, you said that it keeps us locked into a short-term mindset. What do you mean?
Yes. So this is so striking to me. There's a culture among mom media, so that's blogs, ads that are aimed at us, that really focuses almost exclusively on couponing. And I certainly am not against couponing. I do it myself. I love saving money. But it is such a small part of managing the family finances. I think it can be a distraction. We can spend so much time focused on that we forget to do things like set up a 529 account for college savings or take out the life insurance our family needs to protect ourselves. All sorts of bigger financial steps we can take to protect our financial future, which all take time and take some effort. And instead of spending time, you know, searching for coupons and discounts, I think we can redirect our energy to that. I think it's one of the most striking things about when it comes to moms and money in our current media culture. It's really all about thinking about dollars and cents instead of these bigger things that can do so much more to build wealth over time.
Yes. Do we then ignore becoming better, smarter shoppers, or do you think that's still important?
So I absolutely think it's important. I mean, I never want to, you know, tell someone to waste money or not to use a coupon or not to miss a deal. It's just a matter of thinking about our priorities and how much time we're spending on that. So the friend that you mentioned that I talk about in the book, you know, some people, including my friend, will spend a lot of time searching for coupons and going grocery shopping so you can get that bill down. And, you know, there's something to be said for spending less time doing that and instead looking at your long-term retirement savings and making sure they're balanced the right way. So just thinking about how we're spending our time and making sure we're not squeezing out those coupons, spending so much time doing that we're ignoring these bigger things.
We'll talk about some of those bigger things when we come back. And we do have an open line for you. If you have a question about how you can build your own wealth as you are raising your family, our guest is Kimberly Palmer, the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We'll also talk about teaching our kids about the value of a dollar when we come back, and ways that we can save for our child's education. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about moms and money and various financial challenges facing moms. Welcoming your questions for our guest, who is a mom, a mother of two, Kimberly Palmer, author of the newly released book, Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Wondering what financial issues are most important to you if you are a mom, sort of what sorts of a balance are you finding between motherhood and financial security? What issues are you struggling with? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Kimberly, you encourage women to embrace their inner investors now. Why is that so important?
Yes, I think this really speaks to the fact that a lot of us have ignored our own investing powers. And the fact is, research shows over and over again that women actually are really good at investing, but we don't think we're good at it. So we underestimate our own investing skills, the ability to pick a diversified portfolio and manage it over time. And so what is so shocking to me is that still today in 2016, in two couple households where you have a man and a woman, husband and wife, it's the husband that is most often managing the family investments. And so what I'm really encouraging women to consider doing is to embrace that ability to manage the investments, do it together with your partner, or, you know, offer to take the lead, because as I mentioned before, we really are likely to have to manage investments on our own at some point in our lives. And so we have to be ready for that, know where our money is, be comfortable making these choices. And so I think we can benefit a lot, our families can benefit a lot, if we work together with our partners or on our own to pick investments that make sense for our family, to make sure we're saving and investing for both retirement and college, which are the two main priorities for a lot of moms.
Explain the importance of moms having the money talk with their husbands or partners.
It's so important. So what I found from my interviews with moms across the board is that often we don't have time to talk about money, or we feel like it's awkward or uncomfortable. We don't want to deal with some of these issues. And so we don't talk about it with our partners, and we just kind of let things continue on as they are, the status quo, which often means not doing things like not opening a college savings account for our kids, or it means just letting our retirement savings sit there without rebalancing them once a year, checking in to make sure the investments make sense and they're not just in a default investment that's overly conservative or overly aggressive as we get older. So sitting down, having a kind of money date with your partner, if you have a partner, can be really helpful. And the main reason it's helpful is because it kind of forces us to make a to-do list with our money and to say, oh, hey, we haven't reviewed our life insurance recently. We should maybe reconsider that and take out a new policy, or finally open up that college savings account. All sorts of action steps can come out of those discussions.
Yeah, and talk about some ways in which moms can become better investors.
I think it's really about comfort and talking about investing more so it becomes something that we're more comfortable and confident about. One thing that has really struck me in my research is that confidence is a big factor with women and money, and a lot of us undersell ourselves. We don't believe that we are good at investing. And so just developing that sense of confidence. And I think that can come from talking with our girlfriends more about it, feeling free to ask each other questions, just saying things like, hey, you know, how are you managing your own retirement savings? And a lot can come out of those discussions. We can support each other and just make it a more normalized part of our discussions and less of a taboo topic.
You urge every mom, regardless of age or marital status, to place an immediate priority on saving for her own retirement rather than saving for her child's college education or tuition. What's your reasoning behind that?
Yes. So many moms, our intuition is to put our kids first. It's a very natural thing to do in life and with money. And so a lot of us have that urge to first start saving for our children, their college education, at the expense of our own retirement accounts. And this is a huge mistake that moms can make because, I mean, as we all know, there's no loans we can take out for retirement. If we don't have the money saved, that's a big problem later in life. And unfortunately, a lot of older women suffer through that in retirement. They don't have enough money after the age of 65. So it's something we have to really prepare for and, you know, also to make sure we're not a burden to our children in the future, which is a concern of a lot of moms as well. So before you even think about saving for college, you want to check in with your own retirement savings. Make sure, first of all, if you're working, if you have a 401k account, you have that set up, you're contributing to it. If you're taking a break from work and not working, you can still save for retirement in something called a spousal IRA account. So there's all sorts of ways to save for retirement, whatever your situation is, and that really needs to be our first priority.
Yeah. So can't you contribute to your 401k and save for your child's education?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for clarifying that. So yes, of course you can do both. So when you're going through your finances and figuring out how to prioritize things, you want to first set up your retirement account, then, of course, set up your children's savings account for college and get that going. So the ideal situation is that we're doing both at the same time. Unfortunately, a lot of families have to make really hard choices. And sometimes when you're going through a really lean period, you might only be able to do one. And so if you have to sacrifice something, first press pause on your college savings account before you stop saving for your own retirement.
Yeah, and do you advise to max out your contribution to your 401k if it's matched?
Yes, absolutely. So workplace benefits are a huge overlooked source of wealth for families. So if you're working or your partner's working and you have access to workplace benefits, you want to make sure you're getting the most out of those. Number one, as you just mentioned, the 401k benefit. So any matching that's offered, often you have to first contribute sometimes 3%, sometimes 6%. You want to max that out so you are receiving that benefit, that 401k benefit. And then you also want to look at other workplace benefits that you might have been overlooking. This is actually something that came up over and over again in my interviews, because because I realize so many families are leaving money on the table by not maxing out their workplace benefits. Of course, there's health insurance, also things like flexible spending plans. You can often prepay pre-tax dollars for things like childcare, transportation, and then you are able, and healthcare costs, of course. So then you are able to actually save money by paying for those things on a pre-tax basis. So workplace benefits are a huge area that I always encourage people to take a closer look at, because we often forget to take advantage of all of those benefits.
You are listening to On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Kimberly Palmer, author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. What questions do you have about the financial challenges facing moms? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Brian in Prairie du Chien is with us. Hello, Brian.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
The point that I wanted to make is, I think you also have to consider, sometimes moms have a plan. You know, my daughter's pregnant now that she's going to be off a month, and I know I ran into this with my wife. She was going to be off 3 months. With both of our kids, she didn't get back to work until the kids were like a year old, because you have that mother-child bond that once a child comes out, it's like, yeah, I don't think I can really follow my plan and get back to work. And I fear that I'm going to face that with my daughter. You know, I just don't think a month is enough. And all I have to say from a dad's point of view is, if you get into that, obviously you're going to run up some debt. And in our case, each time I think we had about $5,000 on the charge card. And I said to my wife the second time, you know, I don't mind doing this and I'll work the overtime, but you got to stop telling me how much we're in debt. I think it's good that you're taking off the time, but don't kill me with the lecture about being in debt also. Yeah, you can only have one or the other.
Thanks for sharing that, Brian. What about thinking about how long you're going to want to be off of work, Kimberly?
Yes. Yes, Brian made such a good point, because I think that is a common experience. I know it happened to me too. I mean, when you have that baby before you become a mom, it's hard to really imagine and predict how much time you might need to take off or want to take off. And I know with my first baby, I learned that lesson. I realized I would want more time. So when my son arrived, I planned it, and I could say, I'm definitely going to want to take more time off, because it's just so hard to leave. You know, it's hard to leave your baby to go back to work, and that's a really challenging thing that a lot of moms face. And I think the hard part, as Brian brought up, is building up debt while you're to fund your maternity leave. We want to try to avoid that, if at all possible, because debt is so expensive, and then you're paying that off even after you go back to work. And if it's on a credit card, the interest rate can be as much as 17% or even higher. So that's why, as much as we can, we want to prepare and give ourselves that cushion, so if we do end up wanting to take even more time off than planned, we can do that. So that means, as soon as you know that you're pregnant, putting money into that savings account to specifically fund your maternity leave, because that way we can reduce the chance, or at least reduce the amount of risk we have for building up debt while we're on that leave.
Yeah, makes sense to do that ahead of time. But let's say you didn't, and you have $5,000 in credit card debt. Now what?
Yeah, so paying off debt is a very common issue that a lot of families are facing. So basically, the strategy is just to make a plan for paying it off as quickly as possible. It's such a burden. It's so expensive, especially if it's credit card debt, because that tends to carry such high interest rates. So you want to come up with your budget and savings plan, so every month you're putting aside money to pay off that debt, chip it down as quickly as possible. And there's actually a lot of useful online calculators that can help you with that, just to say, okay, if I pay, you know, $200 off a month, how quickly will I pay that down? Because it's really the number one priority before, of course, doing other long-term savings goals, like saving for college, even saving for retirement. You want to unload that debt as quickly as possible, because it is such a burden to families.
Yeah. Maybe talk some about ways to set priorities when it comes to, I mean, Brian was upset that that the debt was racking up. I mean, you can maybe rack up less debt if you prioritize your spending, right?
You can. And so the problem, of course, as we alluded to before, is that suddenly when you have a baby, your expenses are also going up. And usually those expenses are going towards two-thirds of our expenses are going towards three main areas, food, housing, and transportation. Those are all big lifestyle things, but there are ways we can cut them back. So, for example, doing things like learning to cook more at home, make family meals as opposed to, you know, spending money to get takeout or go to restaurants. That's a big area of expense or of potential area to cut back and save money instead. So just doing more at home and establishing that tradition. I actually noticed in my own family, we have a tradition of Friday night, movie night, we order pizza. And suddenly, a month ago, my husband and I realized if we make that pizza instead, you know, we can get the dough and the sauce and the cheese for, you know, under $10. And if we do that instead of ordering pizza, we'll save $1,200 a year since it's a weekly thing. So sometimes small habit changes can save a lot of money.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about pressures moms feel at the workplace. They have to make money, especially if their households do depend on their incomes, but they can't plan when their children get sick or maybe when they need a ride to soccer practice. Just some general rules on how moms deal with all of this.
It is so hard. I mean, this is definitely the reality a lot of us are living every day. So, of course, we need a support system because we can't do everything. So that usually, number one, falls to our partner playing a really active role if we have a partner. If we don't, if our partner is either, you know, really busy at work himself or otherwise engaged, we need another support system. So family who are nearby, friends. I mean, we can't do everything ourselves, even though so many moms, so much is on mom's shoulders. So you have to be able to negotiate at your workplace so you have the flexibility that you need. We hear so much about the salary negotiation, and that's a really important part, a really important piece of negotiating a new job offer. But for moms, often what's equally important is negotiating the flexibility. So as soon as you have the salary conversation, I found a lot of moms, when they are making these decisions, they turn around and also say, I need to be able to, you know, work from home one day a week or leave at 5 to get my kids from school, whatever it is that makes sense for their family. That negotiation process was really important for a lot of the moms that I interviewed. So knowing what you need to ask for and getting that help, that support from your workplace, and luckily a lot of workplaces are more aware and, you know, friendly toward these types of requests nowadays. And also just from your community. So pairing up with other moms and dads who have similar needs, maybe trading off duties. So when there's a day at school where school is suddenly closed, which is such a hassle and challenge for working parents, you maybe trade days that you take turns taking the day off from work. So partnering up with friends and family members can help a lot.
What advice do you have for moms who might choose to work part-time or freelance?
I was so impressed with the moms that I interviewed that made this choice because they basically found a way to still keep their hand in their professional life and be able then to ramp up again when they were ready. So a lot of the older moms that I interviewed, so moms where kids are already either out of the nest or about to be out of the nest, they really benefited from the fact that they engaged in contract work, freelance work, part-time work, even when they were mostly at home with their kids, because that meant they were still professionally ready and had those connections. So when they were ready to take on more work or maybe go back to work full time as their kids grow up, they were able to do that. So one lesson I learned from moms that do work part time is that it's so useful, especially as their kids grow up, because they have that ability to ramp up when they're ready.
We are talking with Kimberly Palmer, author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. And if you have a question for her about that has something to do with moms and money, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jeannie in Waukesha is with us now. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Go ahead, Jeannie.
My question is, as a divorced single mom at the age of 50, I didn't think I would be in this position where I would have to save for my retirement, but I am wondering, with the job market the way it is and with trying to raise my family and devote some of my money to my children, because I'm very, very generous with trying to provide for their needs and wants, how much should I have in retirement right now at the age of 50? And what is the average that people my age have? I gave up most of my high-income earning years to raising my family, and now I find myself a little behind the eight ball. So I'm just wondering if you have any advice for where I should be with a retirement savings now and how to curb my generous heart with my children and limit some of the wants so I can put more away into savings for retirement.
Kimberly. Yeah, thank you, Jeannie. That is such a good question. And I think one that's so common among women. So one thing that I would recommend, because of your question about retirement and how much should we have saved right now, it is such a personal question. It depends on so many different personal factors. It depends on things like your current lifestyle expenses, how long you expect to continue working if you are still working, what your tax rate is, your current and past salary. So what I really recommend is to use an online retirement calculator. There are free ones all over the web. So one useful resource is bankrate.com. Basically, you can pull up an online retirement calculator, enter all of these factors in, and it will spit out a number that you can aim for. So it will tell you how much money you should have saved now, how much money you should have saved in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years, and that can be a really useful tool. And I'm also really glad you brought up about generosity with your kids, because yes, I think this is a universal challenge for moms. I mean, we want to give everything to our kids, and we really have to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves first. And so thinking about, you know, how can you do that and how can you make sure you're not being so generous that you're putting your own finances in peril. One thing that comes up a lot with moms is that thinking about, we want to make sure we're not a burden to our kids going forward. So just thinking about, you know, maybe in some ways you're doing them a favor too by making sure you're taking care of yourself first. So it's a big challenge. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, Jeannie. You know, you say mothers have to be prepared for the hardships of perhaps a divorce, like what happened to Jeannie, or even the death of a spouse or some other unexpected event. What should moms know, and what should they do to protect their kids and themselves from these unfortunate events?
Yes, this is such an important topic. So what we really have to do to protect ourselves and our families is to dive into this uncomfortable subject. So write an estate plan, work with a lawyer. There are, of course, online free or very low-cost versions available, but in most cases, just to make sure everything is taken care of, you want to actually work with a lawyer to have an estate plan in place so you have guardians appointed for your children, so you have wills written and life insurance taken out. So many families put off this step because, you know, no one wants to think about these uncomfortable topics, but it's so important so you're protected. So you want to make sure that you have life insurance that would cover all of the costs if suddenly one income disappeared because of a tragedy. And, you know, having that emotional trauma happen to you is only compounded if you also have the financial stress. So at least we can take care of that financial stress and make sure we're financially prepared for that. As uncomfortable as it is to talk about it, it's so important for parents to take care of that.
We are talking with Kimberly Palmer. She is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. And we are welcoming your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
Working 9 to 5, what a
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Kimberly Palmer. She is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. We are welcoming your questions about any money challenges that you have experienced that come with motherhood and other financial issues involved with motherhood, from expenses like diapers and childcare to saving for big future goals like college tuition, saving for your own retirement. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kimberly, a lot of moms are stuck between caring for their children and their aging parents, which can be quite draining financially and emotionally. What words of wisdom can you offer for moms in that position?
Yes, this is such a big challenge for moms. So the biggest thing is moms who are doing both, caring for their kids and their parents, really need to remember to take care of themselves first, because it's so easy to quickly feel drained, not just financially, but emotionally too. So the moms that I interviewed who are in this position, they really taught me the only way to be able to do this for an extended period is to make sure you're still prioritizing your own needs and making sure those are being met. And that often means negotiating more at work if you're working for flexibility, so you can have that ability to caregive. Sometimes it's a really acute situation where your adult parent suddenly needs, you know, full-time care from you for a couple weeks. And in that situation, perhaps you can just take a leave of absence or use vacation time from work instead of giving it up altogether. What I found is that a lot of moms feel such intense pressure during these periods when they're doing this double caregiving that they leave work, they stop working, and they give up all that income. And then suddenly, when they no longer have that acute pressure, it's hard to go back and, you know, find a job again, rebuild what you had. So if there's a way through flexibility or taking some kind of leave when you can still have your foot in the door to return to your position, to your job, it can help you financially so much in the long run, because it's really hard for moms when they stop working altogether to take care of those acute needs, and then they have nothing to go back to financially.
Yeah. Our caller before news who's divorced and apparently not working and saving much for retirement, how do new moms, if they decided to, or for that matter, experienced moms, if they decided to get out of the workplace, get back into the workplace?
Yeah, so this is, it's a big challenge, but it's something that is so common that we can really support each other as we work through this. So one of the biggest things is actually just getting experience in the workplace today by doing even an internship in your 50s or 60s. I've interviewed moms, their kids are now out of the nest, that actually really gained so much by taking on a short-term position that we usually associate with college students, an internship, but it's actually a growing thing for moms that are getting back into the workforce. And it can be a really useful tool, so that's something to consider. Also, just thinking about how people communicate professionally today, looking at your social media profiles. One thing I found among women, moms who are looking to return to work, is we often have to start with just rethinking what comes up when someone does a web search of our name. Does it give a sense of our professional identity? And if not, what can we do to change that? So looking at your LinkedIn account, making sure you have one, first of all, and then uploading as much professional experience, even if it's volunteer experience, to really showcase your best professional self. All of that can help you make those connections and network to get the job that you really want.
Let's take a call from Amy in Salem. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I am a first-time grandmother and looking to put some money aside for my granddaughter somewhere, and I just am looking for an opinion on what is the best place for me to place that money. I'm thinking to start some sort of investment on her behalf, or a bond, or a savings account. As a mom, I've not had a young child in a long time. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, well, that's so generous and such a nice thing to do for your grandchild. So there's two things I might consider thinking about. So one is, if you are thinking that you want to help with the child's future college expenses, then you might want to look at a 529 account, a college savings account, because then you know the money will be used for college and it's in the child's name, and they will have access to that for their educational expenses down the road. So that is one thing to consider. And if you're looking for something outside the educational realm, so you don't want it necessarily to be used for college or educational expenses, then you can look at just, you know, opening up an investment account. It could have your name on it along with the child's name, and it could be a general, you know, index fund, something targeted toward when they are coming of age in their 20s or whenever you have the vision that you want them to be accessing and using that money. And it can be in some kind of diversified fund, so the same kind of thoughts we use to choose retirement funds or college savings funds. We always want it to be diversified. So that can all be so useful and so generous to support your grandchild in the future, and they'll know that it came from you.
So an index fund, my granddaughter would be able to access at a specific given age designated by me?
Actually, with something like an index fund, you don't have any costs of taking it out at any time. So unlike a retirement account or a 529 college savings account, where you actually would have to pay a fee to take it out early when it's not being used for the intended cost or the intended expense, if you just choose a basic investment fund, it operates like a savings account where you can take it out any time. One thing to think about is that some grandparents and parents like to actually pick a specific stock because that their child relates to or is interesting to them. So that is less of a financial tool than an educational tool. So they know their child loves Disney films, for example. They might buy Disney stock just to get them excited about investing and excited about understanding how money works. But of course, if we're thinking more in terms of you want to have an investment for your grandchild to use in the future and it's providing financial support, then you know, it's less about picking a specific stock, which is very risky, and more about making sure you're choosing something that is diversified.
Good luck, Amy. Thanks for the call. Anne in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Anne.
Hi. Yeah, I would like to know how much money will I be out after the child's tax deduction is done. I have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old that I'm just kind of looking ahead to tax returns, and I'm just wondering how much, what kind of cash does that turn out to be? What am I going to be missing?
Okay, I think for that kind of specific question, you would definitely want to talk with a tax professional. I don't want to give you specific tax advice without knowing, you know, a lot more about your situation, but I think it's great that you're looking at that kind of tax benefit, because tax benefits that relate to parents and kids is actually another area that often gets overlooked. So it's great that you're taking advantage of that.
Yeah. I did also want to talk to you a little bit about teaching kids about money. I promised that we would. You advise that we should model good financial behavior and teach our kids sound financial habits. How do we do that?
It's so important to do this because our kids are watching us so closely. And I actually noticed, even in little ways, I was modeling financial behavior that I didn't want to model for my daughter. So being more aware of that. So, for example, I noticed I was always letting my husband pay for family outings. And sometimes I wouldn't even bring my wallet with me because I knew my husband would just be paying for, you know, whatever activities we were doing. And this was, you know, sending my daughter this message that, you know, only daddy has money and mommy doesn't have money. So I realized that I needed to just be more aware of the messages I was sending. So now, first of all, I make sure that my daughter is seeing me spending money, making spending choices. And when a bill comes in the mail now, which is rare now that we pay so much online, but luckily we still get a few paper bills. So I sit down and I have her sit right next to me and I explain. So it's usually with the utility bill, our water bill, and I can show her, you know, how we are paying for water, how we could possibly cut those costs, And now she'll be the one suggesting things like, oh, you know, let's not leave the water running because that will be more expensive. So I think it's really about just opening up the conversation and giving them insight into the choices we're making every day so they can start to grasp the fact that, oh, if we save more money today, then we'll maybe be able to afford going on a vacation later this year. Or thinking about goals that get them excited, like vacation, can help teach those messages.
Yeah. You also wrote about talking to our kids about money, including sharing our mistakes with them. Why should we?
Yes.
What should we tell them about that?
Yeah, so this is actually something my mom did for me that was so powerful. When I was in my early 20s, she wrote me a letter that really outlined some of her biggest financial mistakes, including trusting financial advisors that were not, that kind of led her astray and, you know, losing a lot of money. And it really taught me some basic things about how to be skeptical and ask questions and make sure you know where your money is and where it's going. So the fact that she was so honest about that, she also admitted, you know, she and my dad didn't have an emergency fund. So at one point they, you know, were down to $50 after a car accident. And those stories from her life really, you know, spoke to me and really were seared in my memory. So it inspired me to want to make sure I avoided those mistakes. So I think it can be so powerful to be honest and share our own mistakes with our kids.
Yeah. You mentioned when we started that you had noticed that most of the money books or money advice for moms had to do with couponing or extreme couponing. But you do think it is important to you know, shop smarter. And you say we should approach spending with an attitude of frugal luxury. What does that mean?
Yes. Yeah, so I am a big advocate of putting money in places that give us more time with our families, help us to alleviate as much stress as possible. So when I say frugal luxury, I'm thinking of things like paying $5 to have your groceries delivered instead of spending an hour at the grocery store in lines with cranky kids. Instead, you can have them delivered and, you know, do some relaxing outdoor family activity. Making choices that really free up time to do our biggest priority, what makes us feel, you know, best, which is, of course, spending time with our kids and having that quality time together. So there are ways we can spend money and prioritize spending in a way that frees up some of that time so we can do that with our kids.
And, of course, being a mom means being on top of a lot of details, not just financial, but all the extracurricular activities, appointments with teachers, all while having a job. How do we stay organized so things don't fall through the cracks?
Yes, it's so important. And actually, I think being organized is a key part of managing your finances, just because then when you do have a time to sit down and review your retirement accounts, you know where they are. You know how to do that. So I am a fan of a paper-based binder system. Everyone, of course, has their own method, but I like to write everything down. So you have a big family calendar, have all of that written down, then have a binder organized by tabs with different financial accounts. So it's easy to see, we have to update our renter's insurance or our homeowner's insurance or make sure that our mortgage is getting paid as it should be once a month. So all of these things, it can occupy so much space in our brain. So the more we can put that on paper and have systems in place so it's easier for us to keep track of it all, it can help us make the right decision.
Yeah. Leave us with a minute of advice for women who may be feeling the financial pressures of motherhood.
Yes, so I think we all are. And I think the best thing we can do is to really embrace our power as the financial managers of our household, to know that our kids are really counting on us and looking to us to make these smart decisions today. So I think it's all about taking care of yourself and giving yourself the space that you need to make these choices, to take the time, have an hour on a weekend where you set up that 529 account. Because even though it can be a hassle and a lot of paperwork, it is very satisfying. And it feels so great to know that you are helping your children and you're saving for your family's future. You're building that financial security.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Kimberly Palmer, former senior money editor at U.S. News & World Report, a mother of two, author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, How to Build Wealth While Raising a Family. I'm Joy Cardine. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back next week. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.